Later today, nations will unveil new plans for curbing their emissions at the United Nations Climate Action Summit in New York. Australia will not be among them. It comes amid warnings that even under current Paris pledges and targets, the world is on track for 2 degrees warming by 2053 and in excess of 3 degrees by the end of the century.
We're not on track, but we haven't lost the fight yet because we haven't really started fighting. And what the Secretary General has done by asking heads of state and government to come to New York on Monday the 23rd is say come with much more ambitious plans than we've had because we need to get a handle on this sooner rather than later.
That's Rachel Keiss. She's the Special Representative of the UN Secretary General on Sustainable Energy, speaking with us here on Breakfast earlier this morning. Martijn Wilder is a climate law specialist, a founding partner of a new global advisory firm, Pollination, President of WWF Australia and Chair of the Australian Renewable Energy Agency. He's in New York for the summit. Martijn Wilder, welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning.
It's been reported, obviously, that Australia has been effectively barred from speaking at the summit. What contribution is Australia more broadly making here?
Yeah, I'm not sure that Australia has actually been barred. I think, as your previous speaker, Rachel, said, countries have been asked to come here to give an update on what their progress is with respect to enhancing their NDCs. That progress report is actually under the Paris Agreement due next year, not at the moment. But I think the Secretary General is well aware of the urgency and is therefore pushing people to come with higher ambition earlier. So I think in that respect, you know, many of the countries have come here to announce what they're doing. I think from an Australian government perspective, I assume they'll be talking about the move they're making in our renewable energy transition and the other areas of focus.
The criticism that is levelled at the Australian government is that it's not ambitious enough, the targets are not strong enough. But there's very clear ambition from the business sector, and in fact that's being represented at this summit. Is there a sort of increasing discrepancy between where you know, policy is at in Australia and where the business community is at on this question of dealing with climate?
Well, I think at a governmental level, generally, there is a widespread disappointment that around the world, governments aren't moving fast enough to meet the Paris Agreement targets. And that's why the Secretary General called for this increased level of ambition. But there's no doubt that the business sector is moving very quickly. They're looking at the ways in which climate change is presenting risk to the things that they invest in. It's looking at what the opportunities are to invest in the energy transition, things like renewable energy. And overall, I think you'll see in New York this week, there are at least about 30 events every day, many of which are being led by the business community to talk about the challenges of climate change and what people can do to have real solutions to deal with climate change.
Can you just help us understand, though, whether that's a global phenomenon or something that is particularly acute in Australia because of where the politics is at?
No, it's very much a global phenomenon. We see it in Europe. We see it in Australia and New Zealand. I mean, around the world at the moment, just for one example, there is a global transition going on in the energy sector. There's a rapid sort of shift away from fossil fuels towards renewable energy. And Australia, actually, ironically, is one of the leaders in that. And it's part of the reason we have a lot of challenges in Australia about how to make our energy system more effective and reliable as we do this significant transition. But that same experience is happening in other countries, Germany, for example, and around the world, and it's part of this global transition towards a net zero emissions economy.
A new report by the World Meteorological Organization says that under the current commitments made globally that governments have committed to, global temperatures will rise by more than 3 degrees by the end of the century. So how much of this summit is a sort of litmus test for those agreements under Paris?
Well, I think as was sort of said at the outset, I mean, it's a very important litmus test to see over the next few days what countries announce in terms of the extent to which they're prepared to and are able to increase their ambition under the Paris Agreement commitment. So I think, you know, we will have to wait and see what is announced and what countries are doing. There's no doubt that there are some countries that are further ahead than others. But I think behind that is this momentum that we're now really seeing, not only at a youth level with all the climate strikes and the youth movement, but also at the business level, who are increasingly focused on the risks associated with a changing climate and the need to assess those risks as they go about their business.
Is the main sort of political game at this summit in relation to coal and the difference between the developed and the developing world and the ability to move out of fossil fuels?
I think that fossil fuels is one element. I mean, energy is a major source of global greenhouse emissions, and all fossil fuels contribute to significant emissions. And so there is this focus of transitioning out of fossil fuels towards renewable and other cleaner forms of energy. But that's just one part of, that's just one of the issues that is discussed here. For example, on Wednesday, there will be released a major report on the state of our oceans, and that report, in what's been shared today, we'll talk very much about the falling productivity of oceans, sea level rises. There's other issues around there's a tremendous amount of work being done on insurance and how to basically help countries be insured for what are terrible climate events which have devastating effects on their economies. So there's a whole range of issues that are being discussed at this summit.
Because I read that Moody's is fundamentally changing the way it rates such things.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a significant amount of discussion now about how do you actually assess the environmental and climate impact of investments. How do you deal with ESG issues? There's Bloomberg have a number of events going on here over the next couple of days around climate resilience, and there's a tremendous focus on how do you build infrastructure that will actually withstand changes in climate.
I suppose it's a question that gets dealt with less often in the public debate in Australia about how fast and how much we should act now. But is it the reality that no matter what we do in terms of public policy in Australia on emissions reductions, that we will, as a society, be paying a lot more in the very near future for things like insurance because of the impacts of climate change?
Yes. I mean, I think that we will be paying more for insurance, but the other issue is that it will simply not be possible to get insurance for certain things as we go forward. So, for example, there are areas in the north of Australia where you can't get insurance now for floods or cyclone damage. I mean, insurance companies are experts in assessing risk. They assess the risk and they work out when something is not worth insuring. So as we get more frequent events, the insurance companies are obviously more reluctant to insure those events. Or alternatively, you will be able to get insurance. It'll just be significantly more expensive.
Energy and Emissions Reduction Minister Angus Taylor says Australia is doing its bit as part of the global response to climate change. He spoke on Insiders here on the ABC at the weekend. This is what he had to say.
The point that really matters here is that this has to be globally coordinated action, and Australia needs to do its bit, and we are. That is what really counts here, and delivering. We'll deliver on our 2012 obligations, not by a little bit, but by 367 million tonnes, which is a stunning overachievement and one for which all Australians should be given great credit.
That's Angus Taylor at the weekend. He describes our efforts as a stunning overachievement, and yet we have the UN Special Representative this morning on this program saying that Australia actually should be doing a lot more to be at the forefront of energy transition. Can both be right?
Well, I think the comment about Australia taking a leadership role, but also about the world taking a leadership role, is right. But Australia, in my view, is at the forefront of this energy transition. I mean, we are at the moment going through a remarkable transformation. We have a significant amount of investment in renewables, and that is causing real challenges to the grid, to the stability of the grid. And we are working through a process of managing that. Many countries around the world look to Australia as to how we're going to deal with these issues of increased distributed energy, increased renewables, how we can integrate storage into the grid. And in that respect, you know, Australia is going through a real transformation and we're experimenting with a lot of new things. At the same time, like in Australia, like in every country, there's more that has to be done if we're going to hit 1.5 degrees. And again, the whole purpose of the Secretary General calling nations to New York to talk about increased ambition is to make sure that we're more likely to get to 1.5 degrees than 3 degrees.
But if Australia then is at the forefront of the transition, why is it so costly, as our government would tell us, to actually move further in that direction, to have more ambitious targets? Shouldn't it be the opposite of that, that if we're at the forefront of this, it would ultimately cost us less than being a laggard?
Transition and transition change is something that, you know, takes time, and in the short term it may cost more. But the whole point is that over time, as the economy change and adjust, that things get cheaper. I think there's no doubt that the cost in Australia of renewable energy early on, particularly large-scale solar, was very high. But as we invest in that and we invest more, the costs come down over time. So There is a cost of transitioning, but at the same time, there's also a cost of inaction. So a lot of the economists talk about the need to avoid future damage and future costs. And I think all of those are things that investors are now starting to look at and starting to turn their minds to. It was only last week, for example, that on the front page of the Financial Review, Macquarie Bank talked a lot about the importance of climate adaptation and climate resilience. And that's something that just now the private sector is starting to look at, but historically have not really turned their minds to. So I think, you know, over time, the ideal scenario is that we move to sources of energy that are much cheaper and much more reliable. The more that we invest in that, the costs will come down over time, and the economy will adjust to that.
Macquarie Bank has been heavily involved in a climate adaptation and resilience report. That's the sort of thing you're talking about there. And that will be discussed heavily this week, as I understand it. Macquarie is seeing climate investment and adaptation as a new priority for its $116 billion infrastructure funds. In global terms, how big a shift is that?
So the challenge has always been that with climate adaptation investment, you're investing in an asset, or you're investing in something which doesn't have an immediate economic return. So, for example, if you build a seawall, that is really an investment that protects the community, but it doesn't give you an economic return. So going forward, I guess the focus needs to be on two things. Firstly, when you're building new infrastructure assets, how do you make sure that those assets can accommodate the changes in the climate? And that's particularly important, for example, if you're building a new road that's on the coast, you need to take into account things like sea level rise. But the other aspect of it also is, to what extent do you find a way to put a value on the importance of building new infrastructure in a way that may cost more in the short term, but in the longer term, it basically is more able to deal with climate change. And so that's a very important thing that we need to get our minds around and basically include as a point of economic return.
Martijn Wilder, thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
Martijn Wilder is a founding partner of Pollination Capital Partners. He's in New York for the Climate Action Summit, which starts later today, Australian time.